Good evening, folks. I'd like to thank you for being here. I am not Adam, as y'all are all aware of, but it's been quite some time since I've spoken to you about our work at Fairhaven. And we do have a number of our folks gone. They're gone for a good cause. As you know, our young people once a month are involved in the groups that get to the churches. And they get together at different sites, and it's always nice to see a large collection of our Christian young people together and singing and having lessons. Actually, Adam, I think, is speaking for them tonight. I want to take a little time and just kind of review a little bit about Fairhaven and kind of reminisce, if it's okay, for a little bit about some parts of the work, and also tell you a little bit about what goes on currently. Before I do that, lest I forget, I want to thank you for your understanding, for your support. On any given Sunday, folks, on any given Sunday, there's probably close to 100 people in this auditorium that are currently a part of Fairhaven. When I'm talking about our staff, house parents, our children in care, sometimes their children. Talk about people that are volunteers currently in some capacity for our work, whether it be out at the home or whether it be at our thrift store. Many of you, I can look at your faces, and I can say, Gene and Ruth were house parents at one time. Others, Betty Glenn and our brother Blanton, they were house parents for 20-some years. So there's many of you that have had a direct involvement in our work. And I say that only so that you can have a little better understanding that Fairhaven and North National, now Watermill, have been linked together very closely for a long, long time. And hopefully for a long time more. Debbie and I have been at Fairhaven since 1989. That's a long time, folks. Seen a lot of wonderful things, seen some very challenging things, had your heart raised to the highest levels you could imagine, and had it sometimes broken to possibly the lowest levels. So bear with me. I'm not an emotional person, but sometimes I get that way, I guess. So I say all those things to just say that it's been a big part of our life for a long time. We've lived on that campus since that time period, except for about a six-month period when we lived up at Fairgrove. So I don't know how to live anywhere else. I really don't think we do. We have a place in Arkansas that we go down there to, and we just kind of sit around and look at each other, and pretty quiet and pretty dark and pretty quiet. And after a day or two, we said, we need to get back home where there's trouble or something going on, you know? But it's been good and still is good. I've got a lot more years behind me than I certainly have ahead of me, as many of us do. Many of you folks don't. And you've got a lot of life ahead of you, a lot of things that you need to look forward to, some things that you need to evaluate in your own lives about the work of the church and things. In 1964 is when Fairhaven started. In the early 1900s, there was a long period of time there where there was a lot of discussion among the brethren in the church about work such as children's homes. In some cases, it was hotly debated over a long period of time. After World War II occurred and those great, wonderful men came back and their families, and I think some things changed and some people's hearts looked at things a little bit differently, perhaps. And I say that because most of the children's homes that are in this directory, which is a directory of Church of Christ homes across the country, most of them folks were started in, not all, but most were started in the 1950s and in the 1960s. And there was a need, and the need was looked at, and it was recognized, and people tried to meet it. I have volume one, number one, issue in front of me of the Fairhaven News, the very first one. Very early in 1964, the National and High Congregation in Springfield, Missouri, influenced by the sermons of their minister, Jack Hendry, and the leadership of their elders, began to develop a much greater concern for the welfare of dependent children. Following discussions with welfare department officials, it was decided by the elders that there was enough interest among the congregation to warrant taking more definite action with regard to establishing a home for children. Early in April 1964, a 61-acre farm was purchased on which was to be established Fairhaven Children's Home. This property is located about 6 miles east of Springfield on O Highway 66. That's where we're still at today. With the elders of National and High serving as the directors of Fairhaven. And that is still true today. By charter, by bylaws, it is established that the board of directors will be comprised of the eldership of this congregation. That has never altered or been changed. People look at me and say, well, are you the director or are you a board member or whatever? I guess I'm a non-voting board member. I do not vote on matters of the home that would come up in a board-type meeting. We meet quarterly, sometimes in conjunction with an elders meeting. At least one of those we're required to meet on the grounds at Fairhaven. And so that is how we are kind of organized at the top. Initially, the director was not called the director. He was not called the administrator, but he was called the superintendent. The very first superintendent of Fairhaven was Byron Nichols. My name is also Byron. I go by Barney, but my name is Byron, so we've gone from Byron to Byron during that time period. Byron Nichols was the first superintendent or administrator, followed by Mr. Bill Harris, then Jackie Barger, and then myself. I've been the administrator since July 1 of 1993, I believe. I think that's when I took over as director. Prior to that, we served as house parents. So, kind of understand a little bit of both sides. So Byron Nichols was chosen to undertake the responsibility of being superintendent of the home. There was a need for a Christian couple to serve as house parents for the children. Thane and Ruth McClurg of Verona, Missouri were hired. Some of you here remember very well Thane and Ruth, I believe. There was a big old two-story farmhouse that sat on the property, and that became the first home to take care of children. It sets down pretty close to where Todd and Brandy's house is. They're around by House 4 now, not the same house, but that's where House 4 was, sort of toward the back end of our circle there now. And that was a big two-story farmhouse. That was the first home that was allowed to be licensed to take care of children. And it said, let me carry on over here. The National and High elders at that time consisted of, some of y'all will know some of these folks, Wayne Cobb, Bill Harris, Woodrow Loveland, M.G. Pamplin, Ernest Porter, Rathel Smith, and Fred Wilson. I have to believe that the ones of these men that I personally knew and the stories I've heard about some of the others, that was a pretty good group of men. That was some great men. Not only folks at the same time that they are pretty close to the same time that they were working on Fairhaven, but they also were working on what? Happy Hollow, along about the same time. I've heard people talk about Brother Rafel. Rafel told me himself one time, he said, "I worked so hard and kept so busy trying to get support and funds to build Happy Hollow and Fairhaven, I almost lost my own business in the process." So, you know, these were men that stepped out there and put it on the line. They just didn't talk about it, they did it. And so I knew some of these folks, some of them I never had the pleasure of knowing, but I know that they were strong leadership for that congregation at that particular time. On February the 11th, Bonnie Kaido had the distinction of becoming the first child to be placed at Fairhaven. She was 15 years old, sophomore in high school. 9 days later, 9-year-old Billy Bryant came to Fairhaven to be a part of that family. Billy was in the fourth grade. So I'm just sharing information straight from this. Folks, when Fairhaven, as I understand, and I've got some old slides that are go way back that you can look at, some old pictures. And you know what? You know what the congregation, you know what they were doing to help a lot of times? There was a group of women that would come out there every week and they would mend clothing. They would mend socks and they'd mend pants and whatever. They were out there every week. You know, they were working. Some of the men, you know, were helping with the farm work. They had an active farm at that time. I've got pictures of a load of hay where they'd put it on their pitchfork, and there's 8 or 10 boys sitting up on top of the hay as they're bringing it in. Now, they'd throw us under the jail if we put 8 or 10 boys up there right now. They wouldn't like that. But they used to milk. They milked, had a dairy operation. We still got some of the old canned cream things, stainless steel, that they milked in, and they processed it, and some of the boys had responsibilities with that. Now, I have had the opportunity to talk to some of those boys that milked. They all hated it. They enjoyed putting dirt and straw and different things in the milk just to show us. But then they had to turn around and drink it, so, you know. But they had responsibilities. Some of the old big walnut trees that are on our grounds have boards nailed up in them, 40 feet up in there still, old rotten boards. You know why? They built tree houses up in those trees. And there's still boards and things nailed up there. We couldn't do that today. But anyway, that's a little bit about how it got started. And, you know, people wonder, well, how's it different today? Well, it's different in a lot of ways. You know, if I look back, I was going to share with you here. On the bylaws, I had something here on the bylaws that I wanted to share. I thought was pretty interesting. And it said here that superintendent of the home shall have the full right to transact business and bind the home in any and all financial matters provided. However, no one single transaction shall exceed $100 without having obtained the consent of the trustees. So if we went today to get one of our vans filled up with gas, we'd have to have a board meeting. You know? So you can see how that is different. You can see how that is different. And so I don't have to come to our other elders and ask for a special board meeting to go fill up a van or whatever. There's so many things about Fairhaven that I think are just wonderful and challenging. I like some things I don't like. I don't like the finances. I don't like the struggles and the always looking at that and working on that's a challenge because the budget, I don't know what the budget was back then, what it took a year to operate, but today it takes about $1.2 million in a year's time to operate Fairhaven. Folks, most of that comes from you. People say, what's your funding sources? And really what they're asking me a lot of times is, did you take state money? I know what they're asking. They're saying, where do you get your money from? Less than 7% of our money is ever tied in with the state, and that is, for example, a foster child reimbursement for a child that comes to us from the state, and most of ours do, and that's $200 to $300 a month. But the majority of it comes from churches, individuals, especially individuals, more so than individuals now, even than probably churches. If I look at the history of church support, it's pretty well remained stagnant for a number of years. And when I say stagnant, some congregations have picked it up. At the same time, others have dropped. And something about the church that you need to know, there's a large number, folks, of our congregations and of the church across the state of Missouri that are bad shape. When I say bad shape, they've dwindled down to 15, 10, 15, 20, possibly 30 members in attendance. No young families, no children. And these are congregations that at one time, I think probably you could look at and say, they had 100, 120, 160, 200 people. Maybe they filled their building. And so, that's happening. That is happening. So we look at a lot of the ways that we try to go about doing our work. We hire house parents. We hire house parents. Each one of our houses has a Todd and a Brandy, or a JJ and an Ashley, or a set of house parents that are there to take care of the children. They rotate out for 1 week every fifth week. Every fifth week they're off. When I've got the staffing in place and the money in place to do it, we also offer some days off to try to help out a little bit. But that's how we operate. We can take up to 8 kids in a house. Can take up to 8. I prefer to keep it about 6 if I can. Right now we do have 8 in one of our homes. We like to think that we specialize in sibling groups, large groups of children from the same family. It's bad enough for these kids to be taken from their home. Perfectly justified in most cases, but it's bad enough to have these children pulled from their home. Given a choice, they'd rather be at home no matter how bad the circumstances. But to take these kids away and then split them up and send them all over the state. So we can meet some needs there where foster homes can't. I don't know of any foster homes that can take 5 or 6 children. We can't guarantee that we can always put them in the same house, because a lot of times we can't. But they're right there on the same campus, and they see each other, and they're involved in each other's lives, and they're still brothers and sisters. And maybe if they're trying to get them back home, family therapy can take place there. We do therapy. We have individual therapy for our children. We also have family therapy. Interesting, but we have family therapy where sometimes the parents come to the campus out there and they meet with the children and with the therapist, and they're trying to work through some issues to get the children back home. Most of our children are wards of the state. We do not have the actual legal custody of those children. Those children, most of them, are legal custody of the state of Missouri. They have been removed by the court system. How long we keep them has changed a lot. Debbie and I were house parents, and in 1989, we had a girl in our house somewhere during that time period, maybe that year, that was a senior in high school, and she had been a part of Fairhaven since, I believe, she was 2 years old. So she had grown up at Fairhaven. That's not likely to happen anymore. simply because laws have changed. The Family Adoption Act that occurred in the 1990s changed all that and said, children do not need to grow up. Their lives do not need to be spent in a children's home or in some type of care type program. They need a permanent family. They need a, as some people like to say, a forever family. Yeah. So a lot of our children will be there a year to 2 years or so. I know I don't have much time left. There's just a lot of information that's out there, that's available. We keep trying hard. We struggle a little bit from time to time. We have beautiful children. They're God's children, just like every child in the world is God's child. So if we keep that in mind and stay focused on it, maybe they're a little rambunctious. Maybe they have some habits that are not quite as good as you or I would like for them to be. Maybe they don't know sometimes quite right from wrong because they haven't had the experience of being raised in a right versus wrong environment. Sometimes maybe they struggle a little bit. Oftentimes they struggle a little bit academically at school. It takes a lot of effort. But I take my hat off. You folks have stepped up and helped us. You know, every one of you that's ever taught a Bible class has had the privilege, and I say it's a privilege and a blessing, to be able to get to know some of our children and get to work with them and get to be a part of their lives. And that's what they need. That's what they need. They need us, but they need you. They need you to know their name. They need you to know when their birthday is. They need you to pat them on the back. They need you to ask, how are you doing? They need you. And I tell folks, one of the greatest things about taking our children to church, other than the Bible that they learn and the information they receive, is that they get the opportunity to get to know some wonderful adults who can hopefully maybe be a part of their life for a long, long time. So, you know, there's opportunities. When I say, hey, we're looking for opportunities, we're looking for people, you know, don't cringe and always think I'm wanting money. You know, I'm not always wanting money. Yeah, I always want money, but I'm not always going to get money. That's not my purpose sometimes. I'm just saying, open your heart. Don't necessarily have to open your checkbook. Open your heart and get to know the kids a little bit. One of them maybe is a little bit disruptive in your Bible class. You know, let us know and work with them, and as you always do. People always wonder, you know, how do we take, one of the questions we get, and I don't know why we get it, but maybe the rumor is that we don't take our kids to church. Fairhaven Children's Home, who are we? And this is the information that we present to people, to kiddos, when we're talking to them. We try to have what we call a pre-placement meeting with whoever's responsible for them, the child if they're old enough, and at Fairhaven and with our staff, and we go over things. We talk to them about things. And we talk to them about church. And it says, as part of what we offer, all residents attend church service and activities with their house parents. This is not an optional part of our program. During the summer months, our children participate in the youth-oriented Bible camp based on their age and their developmental level. So, if someone ever asks you, do the children have to go to church? Say, not only do they have to, but I would say 90% of them look forward to it. You know, we take for granted that kids don't want to go to church. That's not true. That is not true. Kids do want to go to church. They may fuss about having to take a shower or get ready or something, but they like being here. They like being part of something. So, you know, we all have some roles. I know my time's up, and there's a lot of things that you're probably wondering about, but I need to conclude. And in conclusion, I'm going to share with you just a little part of a letter that I received from a young man who left Fairhaven years ago. I was there. Some of our current folks are there. And I also, before I close, I want to tell everyone how appreciative and grateful we should be to all our former and current house parents. You know, their marks will be there for a long time. I'll tell people Betty and Black and Glenn's footprints will be at Fairhaven for as long as Fairhaven's there. I believe that. So, but anyway, this letter, and I'll kind of lead this into maybe our invitation here. It's part of a letter from a young man. He was Vietnamese. We've had Vietnamese children and lots of other nationalities. But this is what he said. He started out, he said he wanted to thank all those that had been involved in his life here. He said, "I'm saying goodbye to all of you, but not really. I believe I will see you again in heaven." He says, "I came without hope, and I'm leaving Fairhaven knowing that people really care about me. That gives me hope." I would ask you, where are you at in your life? What gives you hope? Do you feel hopeful? If your life were to end today, do you have the confidence that you need that gives you a great assurance and hope that your life's where it needs to be? We need to constantly look to ourselves and look inward and examine ourselves and see, are we taking so many things for granted? Do we take time to stop and count our blessings? Name them one by one. It will amaze us what God has done. So I would ask us to do that. Let's catalog our lives and let's see where we're at. Let's see how spiritually strong and solid we are. Are we continuing to work or are we giving up? Have we decided to sit back and it's time for someone else to work in the church? And I'm retired and I'm retired. You don't retire, you refire. That's what I was told once. So I would ask you to think about those things. Thank you for your time. I'm not Adam. I didn't preach a lesson necessarily from the Bible, but I did preach from the Bible. So if there's any way that we can help any of you tonight, if you would come forward, we would be glad to do that. Would you stand?